This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, July 18th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, RTD is waiving bus fares for July and August in an effort to improve air quality. We'll hear from bus riders. Then we'll head to Boulder's Harlow Platz Park to meet some of the goats performing weed control there. According to new research, climate change is making oceans greener. That story and more in This Week in Water. And we'll go to our listener comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines. Then it's How on Earth. Coming up on The Science Show, host Beth Bennett speaks with Christine Yu, an award-winning journalist who has turned her reporting on women athletes and the relationship between science and athletic performance into a comprehensive book on the subject. At 9 a.m. comes another archival recording of The Wit and Wisdom of Alan Watts. Then at 9:30, Terry Reardon will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still coming up, but first, it's time for the headlines with KGNU's John Kellen.
There has been a settlement in lawsuits brought by a coalition of 18 states, including Colorado, against the administration of ex-President Donald Trump. The coalition of states sued twice in 2019 and 2020, alleging that the Trump administration illegally diverted taxpayer money for the construction of a border wall in Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and California. Colorado Attorney General Phil Weiser said the diversion of funds harmed Colorado because some of it was meant for projects at the Peterson Space Force Base in Colorado Springs. He also said that the Trump administration violated the authority of Congress and undermined the separation of branches of government. According to a press release, the Biden administration is restoring funding for those military construction projects, including $8 million for the Peterson Space Force Base. The settlement terms also include the restoration of millions of dollars in funds for military projects in California, New York, Virginia, and other states. Mike Johnston is now the 46th mayor of Denver after being sworn into office yesterday. Mayor Johnston, who replaces term-limited Michael Hancock, said in his inaugural speech that every problem the city faces is solvable. KGNU's Jacob Agatston has the story.
Former state senator Mike Johnston took to the stage at the Ellie Calkins Opera House Monday to take the oath of office and become the first new mayor of Denver in 12 years. Johnston, who was elected mayor on June 6th, talked about the struggles many Denverites have faced in the past couple of years, from the pandemic to surging housing prices. After briefly touching on past events, Johnston shifted gears to his campaign promises, such as ending homelessness, helping those with addictions and mental health issues, and creating a better Denver for all.
Those of us on this stage took an oath today. But for us to succeed, every Denverite must take their own oath. An oath to dream, to serve, and to deliver. To dream a Denver bold enough to include all of us. To serve our city above ourselves. And to march on shoulder to shoulder, undeterred by failure, until we deliver results. That is our oath.
Johnston said he and his office will deliver some plans for their first 100 days today. For KGNU, I'm Jacob Agatston.
The city of Boulder has a new municipal court administrator. Devon Kissick-Kelly was promoted to the position yesterday. She's been the deputy court administrator since 2016. City officials said that as an internal candidate, Kissick-Kelly is deeply familiar with the workings of the court and its team. The municipal court addresses city code violations. Taylor Swift's weekend in Denver has had an impact on the community beyond the stage. KGNU's Yvonne Olivas explains.
Food Bank of the Rockies announced that Taylor Swift made a large donation to them on Friday, before her opening night at Empire Field Stadium, where she played two sold-out nights. Swift's donation will buy enough food for 75,000 meals. The food bank said the pandemic and food inflation created a dent in their budget. Food bank attendance has increased about 60%. Chief Marketing Officer Aditi Desai told 9 News the food bank is spending triple the amount on food compared to pre-COVID times. Food Bank of the Rockies isn't the first or last organization to receive a donation from the artist. Swift has donated to food banks in different states as she makes her way through the country during her Eras tour. For KGNU, I'm Yvonne Olivas.
Interstate 70's Eisenhower Johnson Tunnel has reopened to traffic after a car fire shut it down for several hours on Monday. That fire yesterday afternoon forced the closure of Interstate 70 in both directions. It caused thick, heavy smoke and set off sprinklers inside the tunnel. Firefighters were able to put out the flames and tow the car out of the tunnel. Everyone inside the car got out safely. There's no word at this time on what caused the car to catch fire. The scorching temperatures gripping much of Colorado are expected to continue into today. The mercury reached 99 degrees in the Denver area yesterday. The National Weather Service issued a heat advisory up and down the Front Range and into western Colorado, where it reached a record-setting 107 degrees in Grand Junction. Authorities are urging extreme caution during this heat wave. When it's this hot, being outside for extended periods can lead to heat exhaustion. This, in turn, can lead to heat stroke. People are urged to stay inside if possible and stay hydrated. Everyone is also reminded to check on those more vulnerable to heat-related issues, such as the elderly. Temperatures should return to normal levels later in the week, but today is expected to be mostly sunny and hot. The National Weather Service says temperatures should reach the 90s again. There's a 30% chance of rain, mainly later this afternoon, that could cool things off a bit. In Denver, the high is expected to be 96 degrees. We'll see 94 in Boulder, 93 in Fort Collins, and in Nederland look for a high temperature of 78 degrees. For KGNU, I'm John Kellen.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. The Regional Transportation District, or RTD, is offering free rides on all buses and light rails this month and the next. The so-called Zero Fare for Better Air program aims to improve the notoriously bad quality air in the Front Range during the summer months. This year's program is an expansion of a month-long program that debuted in 2022. KGNU newsroom volunteer Jack Armstrong rode around on the Boulder County routes to chat with folks about the program and to see if it's changing their commutes.
So I'm here asking about the free fares thing in Boulder. Yeah, has that changed your commute at all?
I rode from Denver here, so it was really cool being able to like take that long of a ride on the bus. And I think since it goes for July and August, right?
Yes, it does.
Sweet. So I think, yeah, maybe just try and plan a couple more trips down to Denver since it's like pretty easy. I just sat and read my book for 50 minutes and I don't know how to chill ride, so why not?
Do you typically take a car for your commute?
Yeah, most of the time I do take a car. Just a lot of the times I do have like more stuff. I am carrying like a big old duffel bag today, but I was dropping off my friend's car at their place and just needed a ride back and didn't feel like paying for an Uber. So I was like, oh, I'll pay for the bus, and then the bus was free and that was even better.
Cool, yeah. Where do you guys go to school?
We go to Boulder High School.
You know other people like you and your grade and such, or just from the high school, that take the bus often?
Oh, yeah, there's a few kids, mostly with the skip, but a couple of them take the 204.
Now, does like emissions, fossil fuel, saving the environment really cross your mind when it comes to this whole like free thing?
Or? Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, 100%.
You can get more people to take the buses, since a bus is only, you know, it's taking... You know, there's less people on the road in general, and so, you know, with carbon emissions and all of that, there's just less cars on the road in general if people take the buses, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Sure. Thank you so much for joining me. Your name was?
I'm Diane.
Great. We're here to talk about how the bus is free for July and August now. Does that affect your commute at all?
Absolutely. I'm so appreciative for the opportunity to take the bus more. I can drive less. I'm already very conscious of the effect of emissions on air quality. The past few years, the air quality has been horrible in town. I'm doing my part by taking the bus. And the fact that it's free I'm looking for ways to do more of my errands, at least for the next 2 months, by bus rather than car, and maybe that will develop into a new habit.
Okay, so we're talking with people about how the free buses are affecting people's commute and their lives. How has it affected you?
It's actually been a little bit of a weight off my shoulders, for sure.
Yeah, as far as like just fares, money goes?
Yeah, because I'm disabled and I have a fixed income, and I do sometimes have to scrape for bus fares.
Sure, so it being free is like something beneficial to you.
Totally.
And now do you commute any other way, or is the bus the main way?
No, just the bus, actually. And it's nice to see there's not as much like tension between the driver and the passengers.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, it seems like sometimes, you know, they've got to be the one to tell them they can't get on the bus if they don't have the fare. And so it's been pretty cool because they just don't have to say anything. It seems like they seem a bit lighter, you know?
What's your name?
My name is Dijon.
Nice to meet you, Dijon.
Nice to meet you, too.
Have you noticed anything different with the buses being free? And what do you do for RTD?
I drive the buses, and I definitely noticed a change. There's a lot of people on the bus now. A lot of people.
Different types of people?
Definitely different types of people. I mean, you know, I'm here during, like, the school, so it's almost like the same crowd, but just a lot of extra people.
And as far as other bus drivers go, do you know if any of them have been having a hard time with this lately, or is it just something that everybody's been accepting?
Well, you know, a lot of them have complained about it. You know, they don't really, you know, they just thought it might have been a little unfair because of the stress that might have been coming on. But, you know, I think RTD's doing a good thing, just trying to keep the emissions down. Offering free rides, I think, is very beneficial for everybody else. So it's a little stressful for everybody, but, you know, like I said, I can't really speak for every other bus driver, especially throughout the metro area, but I'm definitely sure it's been a lot more stress.
Do carbon emissions stay on your head at all? Just how this is affecting the environment, and is it a good thing?
Definitely. It's always on my mind. You know, I love the earth. I love green, going green, you know what I'm saying? So definitely, anything we can do to reduce the carbon monoxide is definitely a good thing, you know.
That was KGNU's Jack Armstrong speaking to RTD bus riders about their experiences with the Zero Fare for Better Air program. We now head to Harlow Platz Community Park in South Boulder, where goats have replaced herbicides and weed whackers. The goats were available for a meet and bleat event this past Saturday. KGNU's Poor Jai Junkit and Zach Thompson were there.
What's happening here today? There's
yeah.
the dog, there's some goats.
There's some dog, there's some goats, there's a bunch of people. Yeah, so we're at the annual Meet and Bleat. So this is an event that showcases our goats and our goat grazing program with Parks and Recreation.
That's Erica Carlson, the ecology lead technician at Boulder Parks and Recreation.
We use goats as noxious weed control at Harlow Platz Park, which is where we are. So we rotate them around the site throughout the growing season, and they eat down the noxious weeds and reduce the energy store for the plants, also eat the seeds and neutralize those seeds through their stomach system.
Carlson says the city only uses the goats at Harlow Platz Park and rotates them around the site for 8 weeks. The main species of noxious weeds the goats control are Canada thistle, common teasel, hound's tongue, and crown vetch. Carlson adds the rains this year have made the weeds come in stronger and taller than in recent years.
So this spot, as you can see, it's got a very steep slope, and that's hard for us to mechanically control the weeds. So if we didn't have the goats, we'd be up there with weed whackers. We're not allowed to spray herbicide at this site because it's an urban park with neighborhood nearby, kids playing around, and we don't want to be exposing folks to those herbicides. So this is kind of almost a no-brainer for getting the goats here, just because there's no real other effective method that we could use at this site.
The city contracts with farmers to supply the goats. This year, that's Heather Spiker from Homestead Ranch.
I think it's a great program. It's land reclamation as well as weed mitigation, also kind of is camaraderie to the community.
I feel like we've heard a lot about how goats are helpful to the plants, but how is this program beneficial to the goats?
I mean, it gives them the ability to have free feed, and it also helps with the digestive system and keeps from the weeds growing back. So it's good for their gut and good for the environment.
We also happened to run into Boulder City Council member Tara Weiner.
I used to be on Parks and Rec Board before I was on City Council. So I have a big interest in what goats can do to help us with our environment.
Residents had a chance to pet and feed the baby goats outside of the fence. What brings you here today?
The goats.
Goats?
Yeah, we're here to play with the goats and meet them.
Well, we wanted to see the goats with our daughter and just experience the outside nature.
Are you having a good time?
Yes, we are.
I love goats. They're my favorite animal beside horses. If there's such a thing as a national comedian, creative comedian, it's the goat because they're funny, they're boisterous, they're loving, they're comedic. I mean, they're all over the place. I've worked in two places with goats, so I totally love them. I'm so great to see them here.
The goats will be at Harlow Plaza Community Park for 6 more weeks, munching on any noxious weeds they can find. With Zach Thompson, I'm Porjai Junket for KGNU. The president of the Navajo Nation was in Washington last week appealing to the U.S. Senate for additional resources to complete a water pipeline project on the reservation. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Clark Adamitis of KSUT and KSJD has more.
About 30% of Navajo Nation households have no running water. The nation started working on a large water infrastructure project in 2009. The project connects the eastern part of the Navajo Nation with Gallup, New Mexico, and the San Juan River. The tribe has used $870 million in federal funding to build the pipeline. And while federal guidelines require completion next year, work is nowhere close to being done. On Wednesday, Navajo Nation President Boo Nigrin appealed to the U.S. Senate for more money and more time.
This region has long suffered from limited access to clean and reliable water, resulting in immense hardship for our people.
Nigrin said inflation, increases in water treatment costs, and the COVID-19 pandemic are some of the causes for the project shortfalls.
The areas to be served by the project currently rely on depleting groundwater supply that is poor quality, and the existing supply is inadequate to meet the demands of more than 43 Navajo local governments, the city of Gallup, the Teepee Junction at the Hickory Apache Nation.
Nigrin said the project needs another 5 years to be completed and an additional $1.3 billion in federal funding. The U.S. Senate is currently considering a bill that will give the Navajo Nation these resources. For KSUT and KSJD, I'm Clark Adamitis.
Up next is This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
Where's Crawford Lake and why should you care? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
Last week, the International Seabed Authority began a 10-day meeting in Kingston, Jamaica, to negotiate regulations around deep-sea mining.
The outcome could determine whether a Canadian enterprise known as the Metals Company will be allowed to mine the seabed for nodules containing copper, nickel, lithium, and other minerals used in smartphones, wind turbines, solar panels, and batteries.
But there's widespread concern that using heavy machinery to extract the rocks could irreparably harm marine ecosystems by churning up sediment and destroying habitat.
As the meeting got underway, the Canadian government announced that it supports a moratorium on commercial seabed mining. Canada joined several countries as well as manufacturers such as BMW, Volvo, and Samsung in calling for a halt. However, other nations including China, Japan, Norway, and South Korea want it to go forward.
A new study was published last week that warns some fish species, including tuna, are changing their migration patterns because of climate change and are starting to move into areas of the Pacific Ocean between Hawaii and Mexico where companies want to mine. Now seafood groups, too, are asking for a pause on the mining, which could disrupt ecosystems that took millions of years to form.
A small lake not far from Toronto, Canada, best shows how Earth's environment began a new epoch brought on by humans called the Anthropocene.
Scientists chose Crawford Lake because sediment deep at its bottom contains fallout from intense fossil fuel burning and plutonium bomb tests.
They say the mud at the bottom of Crawford Lake reflects the 70-year period in which human activity caused more changes to the environment than occurred in the previous 7,000 years, referred to as the Great Acceleration.
According to one of the researchers, the data already show a clear shift around the mid-20th century from the earlier Holocene epoch that began about 12,000 years ago as the last ice age ended.
According to one scientist, Crawford Lake has a remarkably preserved record of annual deposits. Core samples show layers that resemble tree rings containing fertilizers and microplastics in addition to plutonium.
How humans have changed the Earth was vividly demonstrated just last week with unprecedented conditions from extreme heat in the U.S., Europe, and China to flooding caused by heavy rainfall in Japan, India, and also the U.S. And now, according to new research, human-caused climate change is altering the color of the ocean.
Waters in the sea appear a certain color depending on what's in the upper layers. Generally, the ocean will look deep blue, reflecting little life, whereas a greener tinge indicates microscopic organisms like phytoplankton, which contain the green pigment chlorophyll that helps them harvest sunlight.
In a new study, researchers from MIT and the National Oceanography Center in the UK used NASA satellite data to find that in the last 20 years, over half of the world's oceans are getting greener, especially in tropical regions. They say the impact of climate change on plankton is likely to blame.
Phytoplankton are the foundation of ocean ecosystems, and any imbalances could send ripples through the entire marine food web. Phytoplankton also play a huge role in the ocean's ability to capture and store carbon dioxide.
At this point, the researchers can't determine the changes going on in marine ecosystems, but believe that global warming will lead to a dominance by smaller types of plankton, which could mean the ocean could store less carbon.
And finally, paper products have a lot of green cred for being recyclable, renewable, or biodegradable because they're made from cellulose, the carbohydrates found in the cell walls of trees.
But the paper and pulp industry is notorious for its environmental footprint, for the amount of energy and water involved, plus the amount of toxic pollutants released, in part to separate cellulose from the woody part of a tree, its lignin.
But what if you could make a tree with less lignin? That was the idea researchers at North Carolina State University had when they used the gene editing system called CRISPR to breed poplar trees, often used in the paper industry, that they say are more sustainable.
You probably have heard of CRISPR, which is described as a kind of molecular scissors, where researchers can add, remove, or change regions of an organism's DNA. It's being used in medicine and agriculture, where it's helped to treat cancer or produce disease-resistant rice.
After identifying three important genes associated with a poplar tree's lignin production, the researchers were able to modify specific DNA segments to reduce lignin levels by 35% when compared to wild trees.
They say the low lignin trees could have numerous benefits, such as slashing greenhouse gases associated with pulp production and reducing so-called black liquor, a toxic byproduct of the industry.
The next step would be to grow the CRISPR poplars outside to see if they're strong enough to withstand natural conditions like wind. Also, the trees would have to get the approval of regulators, which might be easier than other engineered plants since the trees did not take DNA from other species like some crops do. They only had their genes edited to produce what the researchers hope will be a more popular poplar.
That's it for This Week in Water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
We go now to our comment line to hear what's on the minds of listeners.
Hi. I appreciated the Connections program on Friday. I was unable to call in. In 2018, Mayor Hancock took control of Denver Public Access Media, giving him control of the content of the two public access TV channels. Kyle Clark, Channel 9, reported recently that a taxpayer-funded feature-length film made by the city celebrates the greatness of Michael Hancock. The city gave him the copyright to the film for future self-promotion. I think this speaks volumes about Michael Hancock's actions at the expense of the people. On the Truth Seekers Health Justice YouTube channel, I posted the video, North Denver Human and Environmental Sacrifice Zone, which reveals a lot about Michael Hancock's cavalier attitude toward the people of Denver. Thank you.
If you'd like to make a comment on something you heard on KGNU, You can leave a message on our listener comment line at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings. That's it for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host and producer, Shannon Young. Thanks to John Kellen, Jacob Agatston, Ivan Olivas, Jack Armstrong, Poor Jai Junkit, Zach Thompson, Clark Adamitis, Franny Halperin, and Jamie Sudler for their contributions to today's program. Stay tuned for How on Earth, the KGNU Science Show. That's coming up after the BBC News headlines.